I want to welcome you to upcoming Dis. And first of all, I ask you, how far back do you go with the band Aerosmith?
Probably about 2004, 2005. My background was in graphic design, and I was doing it just to kind of make ends meet while I was going to film school, and had done some T-shirts and things like that for these guys, and got to know Steven, and then they had sort of asked me to edit this 5-song bonus disc. I kind of lied my way into it. I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that, no problem. Like, not knowing what I was doing. And Steven and Joey specifically liked the editing a lot, and then kind of asked me to do some other things. And then, you know, one time Steven was like, oh, why don't you come on the road and shoot some stuff, and, you know, maybe we'll make something out of it. And it just never happened because it's such a difficult nut to crack with the labels and the publishers,
sure,
and management. You know, but I've been working with these guys on and off for a long time, so there's definitely a relationship there for sure, you know?
Mm-hmm. So now, in deciding to go to Japan, obviously there were some concerns, not only because, you know, there were probably some infrastructure issues, but you guys had to worry about radiation exposure, all these kinds of things. So what kind of conversations did you guys have, you know, in deciding whether to even do this or not?
Well, you know, I don't know. I guess there's some sort of bell curve on what your, I don't want to be crass, but, you know, it's like, you know, are you gonna drink a bottle of whiskey and jump on a motorcycle, or are you not even going to drink whiskey? I mean, it
right.
depends what your lifestyle is. And we had gotten calls to not go, that the radiation was really bad and there was nowhere really safe to eat. And then we landed, there was some of the crew guys were wearing lead jackets and face masks. And, you know, it's like...
scary.
Yeah, if you're going to live your life a certain way, I guess you kind of just bite the bullet and go... Hey man, you know, I mean, you're talking about a road crew. Of, you know, these are road tested guys. Not a lot of them are scared of much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's almost like sending people into battle. I mean, there's guys I toured with that I would take into battle with me any day.
Obviously.
And there's guys I toured with I would never take into battle. So it just depends on the type of person you are and the chances you're willing to take. You know, some of these guys have families. They got to go and make money. So
sure.
That's how it works.
Did you get anybody in the cast or crew, or someone, not the band, obviously, but did you get anybody in the crew that balked and just said, nah, I'm not willing to do it?
You know, I'm not sure because I don't know who was on the crew before we left, but there was a couple of people that were definitely hesitant. I mean, you know, that's, if you got kids and stuff like that, that can be a scary thing to be up against. And who knows? Who
yeah.
knows that we're all carrying around some sort of mutated radiation thing right now. I have no idea. You know what I mean? Who knows
yeah.
how it's affecting the people of Japan? I mean, these are the types of things that don't affect people till years later.
Sure. And obviously, from looking at the video, the response was quite positive and quite enthusiastic. Can you tell me about the atmosphere when you guys hit Japan? And besides seeing a guy in lead outfits, which must be scary, but what about the atmosphere for the fans?
It's pretty interesting, and I certainly don't want to get in trouble with anybody in the band when I say, you know, when you go to Japan, this is a band that's loved, I think, pretty much more than any other band.
Yeah.
You have to sort of be around certain acts to know where they fare well. I've heard from friends of mine who are famous photographers that say, you know, the Foo Fighters go to London and they play for 80,000, and then they go to Paris and they play for 8.
Right.
You know, that's just because the fan base, for one reason or another, is different in those areas. And Aerosmith, for some reason, is the biggest band in the world in Japan.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the people in Japan were into grunge music. It seems like they're into things that are a little bit more, I don't want to say flashy and flamboyant, you know, but they love the rock. They love Steven jumping around and,
yeah.
and Joe whipping their hair. And
sure.
They're just a huge band there. I would say bigger than the Stones,
mm-hmm.
probably, maybe even bigger than the Beatles. I don't know. I'm sort of speaking out of context, but that's what it seems like to me. The vibe that I get is that Aerosmith is the pinnacle of American rock. Or rock and roll in general in Japan, you know?
Yeah. Now meeting the fans and hanging around there, can you tell, do you have any idea why it is that just seems to be a place they're so popular? I mean, not that they're not, they're popular all over the world, obviously, but was there anything about the meeting the fans that gave you an indication why Japan's so special with the band?
Well, I mean, if you watch the movie, that's something that I asked the superfan Nobu, because I myself was wondering that.
Right.
Because you spend time back in the States, and everybody's listening to pop or Katy Perry or Taylor Swift. And don't get me wrong; those they're very talented people, and I understand why kids love them. But
sure.
it's like there's something about rock and roll that I don't know, man. It just you can feel it in your bones. So I had asked this guy on camera, because there was really no ending to the film, because I myself had always wondered, and if I had made, you know, an Aerosmith documentary, a feature like the Eagles special that came out, I would ask that question, is why are these guys still together? I mean,
right.
Bill Wyman quit the Stones. Mm-hmm. You know, numerous guys have left the Eagles or AC/DC or...
any
band,
really.
Maybe Zeppelin would still be going if Bonzo hadn't died.
Right.
There's Cheap Trick. Bonnie decided he didn't want to play drums anymore recently, and it's like the five guys on Aerosmith are still the same five guys, and I have no idea what that is. It seems like you see in the press and in the news that they fight so much. Why hasn't Steven quit, or why hasn't
right.
Tom quit, or Joey just, you know, figured, fuck this, I'm going to give it up, or whatever.
Yeah.
But I asked this guy, and I was like, well, you know, I don't get it. What is the deal? And he said something very profound, which was, you know, relationships are very... He said it in broken English, and
yeah.
I'm not going to try to say it verbatim, but basically what he says is, relationships are very difficult to keep together. You know,
yeah.
People get married for 10 years, 20 years, they get divorced. People get together for 6 months, they get split up, or you have kids, and then you have companies, and people decide that they're going to branch off from the company because they're not getting along with their business partner, or whatever the case may be. You're talking about five guys that have stayed together for over 40 years, and
yeah.
they're dealing with the same living spaces and management and finances, and that's about as tight as a family can be. So I think that there's something about loyalty with the Japanese people that really, you know, sticks with these people about this band. I meant. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly, and I like the way on the film that you kind of intercut with each of the songs. You kind of take something somewhat related to the piece that they're playing and take it out into the streets of Japan and into the places that you guys have had a chance to visit, and of course meeting with the fans. I got to tell you, the most impressive part to me, and I'm curious as to whether or not you had to fight to get them to do it. There's a scene in the dressing room where they're talking about a song selection, and I guess fans wanted to hear a particular song. And there was some discussion among the band members, and I remember Steve saying something about, you know what, they don't care if we mess it up, they just want to hear the song, and
yeah.
And it's just a wonderful moment. I'm a musician myself, so it's just a wonderful moment to hear someone say something like that. And I'm wondering if you had to fight though to get that kind of candor, to get the band to allow that kind of candor on the camera, because it's incredible candor.
Well, I mean, I've worked with these guys long enough that there's some certain amount of trust. You know, which I think is huge. If you're dealing with a famous actor or you're dealing with a band, you know, that's why some of these bands like Metallica, they continue to go back to a photographer like Ross Halfen, or they
right.
use Wayne Isham for a lot of stuff, because they know that they can trust these people. And I feel like that my relationship with Aerosmith is you know, that's where it is. And it's funny, because that was the one thing I was worried about, Tom Hamilton kind of looking... a little like he was worried about playing the song, and like, oh my God, he's not going to like that. And it's like when Tom called me, the first thing he said was, God, I love that scene when I walk in and I didn't want to play Hangman's Jury. And I'm
right.
like, okay, well, there you go. And we put it in the movie. So,
well, like I said, I guess maybe I can relate, being a musician myself. That's just not the kind of thing that a lot of, you know, pedestal type musicians would want to have the fans see. They just wouldn't. Even though it's human, it's very much a part of, you know, of who they are. I think it's a wonderful piece. But I just was, I guess, surprised and pleasantly surprised that they allowed something like that in there.
Yeah, the thing is, too, is, you know, you're talking about guys that have been playing music for 40 years, and there's everybody likes different songs, and, you
right.
know, they play a show in Boston at Fenway Park, and then all the fans are screaming because they didn't play South Station Blues by the Joe Perry Project, or
right.
whatever the case may be, and it's like, look, you have to play, you have to play some hits, you have to play some deep cuts, you got to please everybody. You can't just play to the hardcore fans or whatever, and
right.
They've thrown some curveballs. You know, Joe will just go into a riff one night, and the band will just have to they'll just have to do it. And
yeah.
that's, you know, they play this game called Dare to Suck, which is, that's why I made the movie.
Right.
I just figured, hey, I'll just make the movie and take a chance, and if they like it, we'll put it out, and if not, oh well, I did something cool. And it's like, I just did it, and they dug it, and that's the way Joe and Steven are. They'll just try something and see what happens.
Yeah, that is the most impressive part of something like this. And you're right about song selection. I got to tell you, if I were to look at it from an Aerosmith fan, you know, disappointed that here we're talking about a whole show and a tour that was all about hope, and they didn't do Dream On. I got to tell you, that threw me a little bit.
Well, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, that's something that you see all the time.
Right.
Whether they play on American Idol or the Grammys or, you know, a World Series or the Super Bowl or whatever the case is. And, you know, Stephen and I got in a little bit of an argument about that because I put the movie together and showed it to the band, and they were like, this is great, it's approved, let's get it out.
Right.
Which is pretty rare for these guys because sometimes they like to
tweak it,
obsess over their work a little bit. And Stephen had called me. He was doing some phoners for interviews, and he called me. He said, I totally realized that 3 months on this, you know, movie, I can't believe it's that biggest song. I said, Stephen, it just didn't work for me. It didn't work with the flow of the movie, and you know, everybody approved it. And he was like, well, I get it, but, you know, I don't understand. And it's like, it's just one of those things. Sometimes you go see your favorite band, and they just don't play that song.
Right.
There's that leaves space for other stuff, you know?
Sure. No, that's definitely true. So this tour, how many cities and how many shows did this entail?
It was a small leg. I would say it was probably eight cities, eight shows or something like that, or seven mm-hmm. cities, eight shows.
Now, were these shows primarily the same as you get in tours, or were these shows very different in the set list and in the performances?
I would say it's about 60-40. They probably play 60% of the same songs and mix it up a little bit every night.
So, and how much footage did you shoot just outside of the concert footage itself? Obviously, you must have shot a lot to get what you had.
Yeah, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of hours. I mean, that's to sit through and go through all that stuff was a little bit laboring, but it's cool. You get to see all the cool stuff that you shot. So there was, God, hundreds of hours, you know?
What's the coolest thing that we never got to see on the Blu-ray?
I tried to put most of it in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there was anything specific.
There's got to be that one thing that you're like, man, if only the people had seen this. This is cool.
Well, there's actually a really, really cool scene that Joe literally walked into Steven's dressing room and started playing The Other Side, which they hadn't played live since like 1990.
Right.
And he comes in and he literally walks in with an amp and plugs it in and just starts playing it. He and Steven are kind of like harmonizing, and it's just, you're in Steven's dressing room for about 5 minutes, and it just didn't make it into the movie. But what's cool about it is the movie is going to be coming out in theaters in October, major cities like New York, San Francisco, and you can, when you go buy a movie ticket, you can get a little code to watch that clip online. So it's pretty cool.
And this is something that's not on the Blu-ray as well.
Right.
Oh, that's got to be cool. So now, what about the songs themselves? As you were, you know, doing the concert things, obviously you were probably trying to stay away from the typical concert footage. So what kinds of things did you try to do differently here to make the concert footage somewhat different? Because it did appear unique to me.
Well, the thing is you have to realize the way that it was done, which is we never really intended it to be a concert film. When I do other TV shows, there's 10 cameras, 2 jibs, a dolly. You know what I mean? This
mm-hmm.
was 5 cameras and 1 jib, because basically this was our touring gear.
Sure.
And we ended up convincing the band to pay to have a jib come out. So it's a little more old school. I mean, if you watch Hendrix at the Fillmore, it's literally like, I think, maybe two cameras, but I think it's even just one.
Right.
So it's a little more organic. I feel like sometimes when you watch live music on Palladia or Access TV, it's like, it's just like cut, 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 edit, 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 and everything is so bright and so... This movie's a little bit darker, it's a little bit more intimate, and it's a little bit more organic, so I feel like that's kind of the feel we have, you know?
Well, it's less manic. I hate watching a concert film, and you're watching, they're focusing in on somebody, and a second later somebody, and you don't get to actually see anything. You never
right.
really get to see anything, whereas in this one, I do think you did a good job of allowing the camera to linger a bit, which I think is a brave choice, because I think today there's too much concern that, you know, kids just had such a low attention span, but you trusted the fans to appreciate, you know, they want to see, you know, what they're seeing.
Yeah, you got to let it breathe a little, you know.
Mm-hmm. Also, you made some cool choices. There's a scene where they bring out some of the vintage equipment, even vintage microphones and stuff, and you do this segment in black and white. What went into that choice?
Just wanted to give it a little more of a, just a dramatic feel. I mean, you today you got so many tools when you get into post and you're editing and color correcting that it was like, let's try to just change it up a little bit. You know, and some of the fans online didn't like that, and some of them really liked it. So, I mean, it's more about making it people don't realize it's, I was trying to make a concert film. It's one thing. It's about us going to Japan for 3 weeks. That's the story.
Right.
And that was, you know, just putting it in there, I felt like, added to it.
Were there a lot of restrictions in where you were allowed to go throughout Japan, you know, because of the disaster and such? Did you have problems with that?
Yeah, there was, like, I think, I could be wrong, it was like 100 or 250 miles outside of Fukushima. We couldn't even go near. You know, we were, like, flying and taking trains around it.
Yeah.
So it was pretty pretty crazy to be there and have to do that.
Yeah, because one thing I did notice is even though the disaster, tsunami and such, is it was on everybody's mind and a part of the motif there, you don't really see a lot of damage. I mean, you don't really see a lot of the destruction that occurred. And maybe...
Well, I mean, it wasn't really something that I actively wanted to sort of capitalize on
sure.
in the film, because it wasn't really about that. I didn't
right.
want to tug at the heartstrings. I mean, I thought it was cool enough that the band went there.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to, like, I mean, because we saw it. There was definitely some of that stuff. But I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go there. It wasn't what the movie was about.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I get the impression the movie is about bringing them the music and you know, to heck with what else is going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, what about the band members themselves? I mean, how did they? What were their individual reactions like when they saw what you put together?
I had rented out a movie theater in L.A. and kind of told Steven and Joe, I said, look, I put some footage together. I want you to see it. But they weren't really sure of what to expect. and I flew out from Boston and played it on a big screen in a movie theater. And, like, you know, we had popcorn and all this stuff. And it was really cool. And they
yeah.
were just completely blown away. And I think Joe, more than anybody, you know, he and his wife, Billy, were the ones that, like, she was there, too. They really pushed to get the movie out. I know Joe had initially gone to Sony, and I think Sony was being run by Steve, I forget the guy's name, something. He's a nice guy, English guy, but
yeah.
he's a businessman, and he was like, it's a little bit lovey-dovey, and the stuff in between I don't really like, and that kind of angered Joe, because he was like, well, this is what the fans want. So it was. We were glad that Eagle Rock ended up putting it out, you know?
Yeah, and it's out on Blu-ray now. And you say, tell me again, so our audience knows, what are the theatrical dates you're talking about?
Pretty sure it's like October. I'm not sure yet, but people will be able to find out. It's they want to go see it on a big screen and hear it the way that it, you know, meant to be mixed and 5.1 Dolby in a big theater. It's going to be really cool.
So how I assume that because the band trusts you and such, you had some tremendous access here. You didn't have any problem with band access or stage access and that sort of thing. Were there any kind of issues that you had to deal with in doing the concert footage?
Well, you're around these guys long enough. I think when you're around any sort of corporation, not that they're a corporation.
Well,
but
no, it's a brand.
You know, yeah, when you're around a brand, you know when to sort of back off and when to get in there. And you know when somebody's not in a good mood and when to keep the camera away. And I have to give credit to my buddy John Bianelli, who's he's the band's tour manager. He
yeah.
he shot almost everything that you see of Joe, because he's always with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, luckily I have that access too, you know.
Well, and that's another part, like I said, that's kind of unique, and you wonder most bands wouldn't have let out. I noticed that quite a decent amount of Joe's footage, especially, you know, I think on the train and such, I mean, he's fatigued as hell. I mean, you could tell he's beat, he's tired. You know, excited about the show, but you know, you were able to show him in a very fatigued, very, you know, beat, you know, situation, and I think that's rare when these things come
yeah.
up. Bands don't
well,
usually
ever
want
seen
people
him live,
to
see. You know why? You know what I mean? The guy puts everything he can out on the stage every night he plays.
Yeah, but it just amazes me that you didn't catch any flack for it. Like, you know, I got this image of being energetic. You can't show me beat, like, you know, tired and just really exhausted. But you did, and,
yeah.
and I don't, you know, I think that's what will make this a bit extra for the fans. Because, you know, if you're a fan of Aerosmith, you've seen plenty of concerts, you've seen the material, you know, you've seen interviews with the band, you know, you've seen pretty much everything there is to see, except maybe some of this stuff, and I think that's what the fans are going to get that, you know, maybe they haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's definitely a behind the scenes. It's like being there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's true. And obviously, you made it, you know, for the fans as well, because there's extra stuff there. But you obviously made it for the novice kind of Aerosmith fan who may only know a handful of songs and just know the band's hits and stuff. You know, it services them as well by being. I know you said you didn't come out to make you know a concert film, but it's a good concert film as well. It's all there. You didn't break up the songs, which, you know, when I see these kind of specials as well, I hate when they break up the songs.
Yeah.
You know, I want to hear them. Yeah, I'm interested in all the cool, you know, interlude stuff you're doing, but, you know, don't break up the songs. And I appreciate that you didn't do that as well.
Yep. No, I dig it.
So what's next on your plate? And anything more with these guys? You have something else going on?
I'm not sure about these guys, but I'm going to. I've been having some meetings with a pretty big studio to do a documentary coming up, and I've do a lot of work for CMT. I just did a big Crossroads with Stevie Nicks and Lady Antebellum that airs on CMT on September 13th.
Cool.
And you know, more music videos and stuff like that. So I'm keeping busy.
Sounds good. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and we're looking forward to seeing this thing in the theaters as well. That's news to me and my listeners here. We didn't know that.
All right, man.
All right. Well, listen, keep it up, and hopefully we'll be talking about another release here.
Thanks again. It was good to talk to you.
You too. You take care.
All right, man.
All right, bye.